This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we are going over Love Classified. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to spoil it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Beep, 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 beep. This just in. Are you ready?
Ding, 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 ding. For one dry kiss. My beeps weren't nearly as good as yours. Damn.
I've been practicing in front of the mirror, so, you know.
Always trying to outdo me, Corinne. Always trying to outdo me.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we do one romantic comedy a week. And this week, we are doing Love, Classified.
Ooh. Oh, that's right. I forgot the comma in the intro. Bad Tamara. I hope it made sense to all you people. Love, comma, Classified. That's the movie we're doing.
And I am here with my hero, the wind beneath my wings, Miss Tamara Cosio.
I am here with my seeking a fun podcast Ooh. Friend. Oh, there she is, Corinne Eddy.
Ah! Ding, ding, ding. Oh, can I tell you, it wasn't until I was 3/4 of the way through doing my notes that I realized that the app in this movie is called the Classify app, not Classified app. It's spelled C-L-A-S-S-I-F-I-E.
No way.
Yeah.
No, then why didn't they call it Love Classify? Because we're not classifying. Like,
Yeah.
Some banner writing. This is a Hallmark movie, correct?
This is a Hallmark movie, indeed.
Indeed.
It's like they like to switch their titles and some things in their titles to make it extra, quote, interesting, unquote, for us. Like their pseudo titles that they have, like the lesbian one we just did.
Yeah.
Under the Christmas Tree or Under the Light My Magnificent or whatever the hell they called it.
I'm just waiting for something that has like 5 commas in it.
Love, comma, C, comma, L, comma, A, comma, S, comma, S, comma, I, comma, F, comma, I, comma, E, comma, D. Exclamation mark.
Can I tell you, Tamara, that my whole classified dating not going so well? Not only have I been banned off of Tinder, but...
Right. I remember.
Yeah. The guys on OkCupid really aren't any better. Yeah, the one guy that I was having a conversation with that wasn't depressed in a very deep way. When I didn't respond to him within 5 minutes, he was like, oh, so it's like that. You're not interested in me and you don't even say anything?
Wow. I'm sorry, I was taking a poop. And I didn't bring my phone in the bathroom with me. And I haven't had enough fiber. Sorry, I wasn't regular enough for you.
So, yeah, I'm still single, FYI.
Oh, man. Well, I'm still sort of single on the semi-front. I've been seeing somebody pretty... Seriously?
Ooh.
Not seriously. I mean, regularly. I don't want to say seriously, but we are so different.
Yeah.
So very different.
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart and very doting and kind, but there's just, you know.
Yeah.
There's some things.
Yeah.
There's some things.
And some stuff. What about some stuff?
And some stuff and some items and some particulars.
Oh, particulars. Yeah. Well then.
Mm-hmm. Particulars.
You know, I always find it's important to get those particulars in order.
Yes. Yes. So I don't know if I feel like I want to divulge any information about our little break last week, because I feel like I know you said you don't owe anybody an exclamation. And I'm not going to say who it was specifically.
Yeah.
Because for their privacy and they're not able to speak for themselves right now.
Yeah.
But... I had a person that was very close to me go into the ICU because they were unresponsive.
Ugh.
And they were on life support for, still are on life support. It's been about 10 days.
Yikes.
And they're going to pull out of it. Like they're getting better every single day. They're making strides towards getting up and around and healthy, but it's slow going for various reasons. And Corinne has just been a huge pillar of support and handling a lot of the podcast stuff because I'm like, help. My brain hamster has killed over and died apparently because my brain is oatmeal. It's mush. And I've been shuttling back and forth between the hospital because my boss he's not a nice person because even though I could very easily remotely work from wherever I need to be at, he says, absolutely not. You have to come in. So I asked him very nicely if I could work from like 7 a.m. to 4 and then be at the hospital for visiting hours.
Yeah.
And he said, no, I prefer you to be here later. So he wants me to come in from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. So I get to go to the hospital from 10 to 2 and then brave 23 miles of L.A. rush hour traffic right through the city to get to work by 3 and stay till 11. So that's been my life for this last week. Not fun. And P.S. if anybody's hiring, please hit me up. OneDryKiss@gmail.com.
Tamara is an amazing graphic designer, FYI. And she is such a devoted and excellent worker. Bosses should be doing everything they can to keep this amazing person that I have right in front of me.
I just got to say the catalyst was when I was practically like on my hands and knees going, I need time off. And I got time off the first day I came back. We meet every Monday. And I was late because 23 miles through LA rush hour traffic in the city, it took me longer to get back than I intended.
Yeah.
Got there late. He gave me shit for being late.
Of course.
And was like, I was waiting for you. You said you were going to be here at 2:30. It is 3:20. And I'm like, you don't wait for anybody. Like,
yeah.
Seriously. If somebody's 10 minutes late and you need to go, you bounce. So thanks for that. And then he kind of backpedaled and said, so how's your friend? And I filled him in. And he's like, well, if they're not even conscious, like, what are you even doing there?
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, I can't even right now.
Well, and also, like, people get treated better when they know that family is there looking after them. You know, like, and people can tell that you're there or not, too. So, like, you know, on some kind of a level. So, like, fuck that shit. What the hell?
Also, this person that's in the hospital, like, continually, they're like, we might take them off life support today. No. We might take them off life support today. No. And that was one of the first times that they're like, we might take them off of life support today. So I'm like, great. I want to be there when they wake up.
Yeah.
And of course, come to find out that that's been delayed and delayed and delayed. But I did not know that initially. So when he said that, my voice went like 5 octaves higher. And I was like, it's because I thought he was going to get on this one. So I wouldn't be there. And this is it. And he said it. He's not progressing. And he's like, okay, sorry about that. That's a good reason. I'm like, well, now that I have your approval, thank you so much.
So when you mean taken off life support, do you mean taken out of a medically induced coma?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Not they're not going bye-bye.
Yeah.
They're trying to remove a breathing tube
yes.
so because they are capable of breathing on their own, but complications have made that not ideal. So no, still around, still here, just hitting some speed bumps.
Oh,
that's all. That sounded way worse. Thank you for correcting me.
I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. Goodbye, Grammy. It's been nice. So anyways, I got to go and record this podcast with Corinne real quick. You going to be good? You going to be good? All right.
As long as it works for you to record the podcast, however we can facilitate that happening, I am here for you. Because I have to say that, like, after my sister died, doing these podcast recordings was actually just, like, a little bit of light every week for me,
yeah.
you know? And so, like,
after we would do the recording, I would feel a lot better. And so,
as long as things work and feel good for you, I'm going to keep on supporting you in a way that makes this all doable.
And I totally feel like that's going to be the same for me after I finish this hospital schlepping.
Yeah.
Once the hospital schlep pilgrimage back and forth ends, I'm going to be a lot happier.
Yeah. I can imagine.
And have more time.
Oh, my God. And gas prices right now. Oh.
Oh, don't even. Don't even. I'm just like watching little bars go down. I'm like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, I miss you. I miss only being able to fill up my tank once a month. I had it so good. Everybody was complaining about the gas prices. And I'm like, not me, baby. I live 3 miles away from my work. Should probably get a bike.
I'm just glad that you have your little red roller skate, because it makes it so that your fuel economy is better. So you're not having to spend like $80 on a tank of gas.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. I would just be weeping. Oh my gosh, is it because your friend's in the hospital? No, because I just spent $87 on gas. And I just filled up my tank 4 days ago. Damn it.
Oh my gosh.
So anyways.
Good times.
Good times. Yep. Everything's coming up roses.
Ooh. So, do you have a synopsis for us?
I do. I'm not sure how good it is, but... Amelia Bloomfield, played by Melora Hardin, is a middle-aged woman back in her hometown of Penfield. Did you figure out where Penfield was, or was it just a made-up town? Ooh, okay.
New York State, not obviously. It's not a suburb of...
Right. Yeah. Okay, good, because I put Penfield anywhere, USA. Now I can correct that to Penfield, New York.
Yeah.
To do a reading for her new book, because she's an author. And her kids are not happy about it. See, she left shortly after their father died and has been pretty distant and MIA for the last 5 years. Her son, Zach, played by Max Lloyd-Jones, is a sweet, struggling artist who lives alone and is trying very hard to find his artistic voice. And her daughter, Taylor, played by Catherine McNamara, is a plucky, independent owner of a small plant shop who's way too busy to focus on anything but her business. Both are pretty unlucky in love until they find the Classify app. Through successful and unsuccessful interactions on it, they attempt to navigate their feelings about their mom, love, and themselves. Who knew a poorly designed app could do so much? Will Taylor and Zach find their soulmates online? Heck, will their mom for that matter?
Ooh.
Will they forgive their absent mother? Will Taylor figure out she's a lesbian? Find out with us as we check out Love Classified.
That's nice. Just throw that in there. And by the way, will Taylor figure out that she's a lesbian? Because she wasn't before.
No, I mean, bisexual? Is that the right term?
You know, who knows? She's on a journey, Taylor is. Yes.
Did I just spoil it? I totally spoiled it. Absolutely 100% spoiled it. But I told you at the top of the show, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one. Because Taylor gets in a relationship with a lady. Or does she?
Questions.
Shh. Secrets. For like 15 more minutes. Shall we dive right into Love Classified with the Classify app that really should be called the Classified app?
Why, yes, we should. And I completely agree with you. It should be called the Classified app. And who spells something C-L-A-S-S-I-F-I-E? It's just begging for a D. It's just begging for a D.
I know.
Yeah.
That sounds really bad.
All right, gentle listeners, buckle those seatbelts. Get ready for an emotional ride. Author Amelia Bloom waxes poetic about how good love stories defy expectations with flawed characters. The characters need complexities and depths. It's their growth along the way that makes them truly worth an epic love story. These are her thoughts as she travels to her hometown of Penfield.
New York.
New York!
New York! Where we will soon be headed. Heyo!
Hey! She pulls up to a posh hotel, and as she approaches the counter, the gentleman working the front desk addresses her.
Miss Amelia Bloom, it's so nice to have you staying with us. She rips off her sunglasses and says, I'm trying to be incognito. The gentleman whose name tag says, manager, great name tag there, sir, tells her the penthouse. Oh my God, what if his parents named him manager and that was actually his name?
I mean, he looked kind of ethnic. I wasn't sure what he was. It was hard to place, but maybe they pronounce it Manager.
Oh, Manager. Yes.
Manager, come here. Your mother's speaking to you.
So Manager tells her the penthouse is ready for her, and she has full access to the gym and the martini bar. She good-naturedly scoffs at the gym, but she's all in at that martini bar. Triple olives, please. Bloop, bloop, bloop. At the Bloom. Fucking A, man. I gotta say, the name of this business, I don't ever pronounce it right. I'm like, Bloomeria, Bloomeria. I don't know.
Bloom E-R-I-A?
Yes. Bloom E-R-I-A, a plant store. Taylor, the owner of the shop, is handling business. Her assistant, Hannah, posts the pic of a local shoplifter to the Classify app. Hannah explains to her boss, Taylor, that it's an app that has local events and dating stuff all rolled into one. What could possibly go wrong?
I mean, you could accidentally date a shoplifter, apparently.
Hey, he was a cute shoplifter. I'll give him that.
I know. Hey, this guy's cute. I'm going to swipe right on him. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
He's a thief. Oh.
I hate it when that happens. Maybe the fact that he was wearing, like, a black and white striped shirt with, like, numbers on it was a tip-off. But I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But he was, I mean, so cute that he might have just, like, bedazzled her with his good looks. And she just didn't even look down to see his dress whites, stripes, I don't know. Jail stuff. Oh, jail fucking stuff. Please cut this.
Jail stuff.
For the love of Christ. Thank you. Jail stuff. Jail stuff. Holy heck. Somebody needs to lay down before they hurt themselves.
His inmate gear. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Perfectly put.
He's like,
inmate gear.
See this classy bowling ball chained to my leg? Yes. I carry it with me in case of bowling emergencies. So it's a digital classified app. Hannah suggests that Taylor use the app and also advertise the Bloom RIA on it. But Taylor seems reluctant.
Close enough.
Close enough. Down the street at the bookstore, Between Two Covers, which I'm like, that's kind of a racy, like, it sort of reads Between the Sheets to me. But, you know, whatever. Yeah. Zach, an artist, explains to Margot, Between Two Covers employee, why this version of the mural draft is the one. Zach says that he's ready to paint as soon as the design is approved, but Margot needs to check with her boss man. Just then her phone dings. Ding! Margot checks it and fumes about infighting in her bowling league. She thought it'd be fun when she saw it listed on Classify, but...
God bless.
It's been more drama than she expected. Now you are in a bowling league. Is it?
Yes.
Is it everything you hoped and dreamed?
No. Too many inmates with bowling balls attached to their leg for emergency bowling situations frequent my league. Yeah.
Curses. How are you supposed to get a good man's that way? Jeez.
Oh, no.
Zach asks her if it's a singles thing, and she goes off. Why is it that everyone assumes if you're single, you're looking for someone? Zach tries interjecting. I wasn't, she continues. Or people envision you alone watching bridal shows. Zach pops in again. I love those shows. But Margot doesn't notice. She's on a roll, dreaming of the day some man will rescue me from spinsterdom surrounded by a dozen cats. I only have one cat, and I like my life. Zach blinks. Got it. Margot is suddenly self-conscious. I'll pass this on to my boss. You want a free bookmark? She thrusts a bookmark at a very confused Zach, who accepts said bookmark and heads out the door.
At the top of the movie, there was a little bit of a montage showing all the characters in their daily life. Mm-hmm. Two of their characters were Max and Frankie. two friends who, in the opening credits, appeared to be a couple. But in this scene, we learned that they're best friends. Best? I have my window open. Give me a second. That is a motorcycle going out, not me farting. Best gay friends.
Likely story.
If that was really me and my exterior, I would be hitting the ceiling right now because that was a long, powerful.
I wouldn't put it past you if you had the five bean salad.
I did not have Taco Bell for dinner. I'm good.
Oh, fine.
Anyways, they are best gay friends. Max is showing Frankie the finer points of the Classify app. Look here, he points out. If only these people could find each other. They have a connection. This person wants to start an urban garden, and the other one wants to meet local vegans. It's perfect. Frankie takes his phone, reads the post in bulk. They're not even looking for dates or connections. Just vegetables. Max gives her the look. Everybody's looking for connection. He points out another post. See? You, like this person, really needs my help. He reads, ready to bloom where I'm planted. Creative soul seeks deeper connections. He smirks. Translation, friendless loner whose therapist says I need to put myself out there more. Frankie, on the other hand, doesn't see what's wrong with the post and continues reading. Let's share all Penfield has to offer. That sounds sweet, she argues. Sweet, Max counters. That's so transactional. That screams no matter how cheap the date is, we're splitting the bill. They both chuckle as she begs him not to reach out to the poor man that posted the classified, and he assures her that it was written by a woman. Ready to bloom, screams Georgia O'Keeffe. They're just looking for company, Frankie says, and Max taps the map, which shows the location of the poster. She's only 5 miles away, he informs her. Why don't you go keep her company? She backpedals real quick. I'm too busy with my work, and my high-maintenance friends can't do all that. He basically triple-dog dares her, but she's not taking the bait. He tells her sometimes connection is chance, but in order to take a chance, you at least have to put yourself out there. But they don't continue the conversation because his phone buzzes and he smirks at her. I gotta go. She tries to lean over to read the text that he received, but he pushes the phone close to his chest. Mm-hmm. I want all the dirty details, she complains. But he has to leave because sometimes you gotta take it offline. He kisses her goodbye on the cheek and they part ways. Take it offline. Meanwhile, across town, in that same swanky hotel bar, Amelia Bloom sits across a handsome bartender. What? Who? How? Why, it's no other than our favorite hall star, Mr. Paul Campbell. Yes! He serves Amelia a martini, and she regales him on her book research. She's hoping to meet somebody at the bar, but for now she's holding court, chatting up the bartender and sipping martinis. But she informs him, she's not doing it for love, mind you. Her editor said her books lack technology and social media and are not believable without it. So she tells Paul, whose real name in the movie is uncredited because I checked IMDb, and they just call him the bartender, so I'm going to continue calling him Paul.
Yeah.
Real name in real life, the bartender's name Paul.
And he, as a gentle listener pointed out, is giving Paul's a good name.
Oh, fuck, that's right. Mm-hmm. We said don't ever date a Paul, and we love Paul Campbell.
Yeah.
See?
Uh-huh.
We could be swayed.
Yes.
We can change our ways.
Yes.
We need to go chum up Paul Campbell and have him change our minds so mm-hmm. we don't have, like, the residual of the funky Pauls.
Exactly.
At our forefront.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you listening, Paul Campbell? We're talking to you.
Yeah. PC.
Anyways.
Just come and hang with us sometime. We're cool.
She tells Paul that she's merely trying to get into the nuts and bolts of meeting somebody online, and that she misses the analog of meeting somebody in person and making real connections because meeting online lacks spontaneity and seems, Paul finishes the sentence for her, superficial. Yes, Amelia agrees emphatically. You probably have all kinds of real connections. Somebody saddles up to the bar and, Paul completes the sentence once again, overshares.
Oh!
He smizes at her, smiles with his eyes, because she doesn't realize that he was making a jab at her. She picks up her phone and coincidentally reads the Ready to Bloom classified ad and tells Paul that she's going to respond. She types, Dear Ready to Bloom, how would you like to see the town through a stranger's eyes? She puts her phone down. She's thrown her line in the social media pool and waits to see if anything catches. Ready to Bloom does so almost immediately. They play text back and forth for a while, and Bloomy gets Amelia to chuckle a few times. Paul is invested now. "We are hitting it off with the lonely local," he observes, and she agrees. "He's funny but awkward and kind of reminds me of my husband." Paul Campbell gives her his signature inquisitive brow. We always say that Paul Campbell gives good brow, and this is a perfect example of it. And she explains, "Oh no, don't worry, he's dead." After a while, there's radio silence and Amelia's ready to throw in the towel. It seems her lonely local's not going to show up. Or Paul says maybe he came in under the wire. He eyes the door and she turns around to see a handsome young man that just walked through the front of the bar, who sees her and gasps, "Mom?" They hug and he peppers her with questions. "What are you doing here? How long are you in town? Why are you staying here, not at the house?" The guy is Amelia's son. And she tells him that he looks handsome and was for sure going to reach out tomorrow first thing. And she's just here for a book tour, blah, 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 blah. She asks what he's doing there. And he explains about the classified ad. And there is a woman that was supposed to meet him there. And he doesn't know anything about her except she likes martinis. Paul Campbell is curiously in the background, even though there is a bar full of people. I think he wants the front row seat to the show because he eventually...
I'm surprised he doesn't pull out his pocket popcorn and he's like...
Yeah, I think he was like sitting there wiping the counter in that one spot for like 10 minutes, like real, real close to where they're having the conversation. I was like, he's right there. At first, he was like, this girl oversharing and oh my gosh, telling me her whole lifestyle. What, that's your son? Oh, I'm here for this. I'm fucking here for it.
You have a hot date with your son. Fantastic.
Yes. And he has the front row seat as it eventually unfolds that Ready to Plant was Zach, Amelia's only son. He cringes in disbelief as he realizes the first time he got on the app, he wound up picking up his mom, who doesn't even live in town anymore. Mom tries to alleviate some of the sting by saying, well, hey, at least we're compatible, which doesn't help Zach's state of mind. Why are you even on social media? He asks. She tells him about research and he is appalled. You're catfishing strangers for your book? Paul is directly behind him and mumbles, that's what I said. Zach asks if Taylor knows that she's in town and she stammers nervously and he knows what that means. No, no, she doesn't.
Speaking of Taylor, Taylor is supposed to have family dinner with her brother that evening, but he cancels on her, apparently for a hot date with his mom. She apologizes for giving him food poisoning last week, but he insists it isn't about that. He needs to hook up with his mama at a bar. Feeling kind of done, she closes up early. That evening, Taylor is hanging out at home and she peruses the Classify app and runs into an ad that says, the heart is a muscle that needs exercise. Ever feel like you're living your entire life in the same square footage, office to home and back again? Let's push each other off the couch and out of our comfort zone.
That sounds hot.
Taylor ponders and responds, I feel called out, but curious. The next day, Taylor goes to a coffee shop to meet up with Heart is a Muscle, but she and her date are obviously new to the online dating scene as Taylor does not know what to look for. No, I'm going to be wearing a t-shirt with a guy doing a cake stand on it, or I'll be the one with the bushy eyebrows. So Taylor nervously approaches a guy with gorgeous eyebrows and asks him if he's Heart as a Muscle. He is not. Frankie overhears and interrupts, letting Taylor know that she's the one. Surprise! Heart as a Muscle is a hot chick.
Wait a second. Okay. Now, we have discussed this extensively. The Classify app does not have pictures in the dating section, just for some added spiciness. And maybe that's part of the draw, that you don't know what you're getting into, which seems like a really bad idea. Mm-hmm. But may I point out that Hannah posted a picture of the thief in the plant store?
Yes.
One of the first things that they showed on the Classify app was the thief in the plant store. So obviously the app does support photos, but not in the dating section.
Mm-hmm. And that way...
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
You can have hot dates with your parents.
People of the same sex.
And if you, you know, thought you were heterosexual, but you end up on a date with somebody of the same sex, you end up finding out maybe a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah. I guess this movie would not work if they had pictures on the app. Okay, continue.
you know, it's a mystery. It's like going to a sneak preview of a movie. Like the time that I saw Trainspotting. Oh, look, it's a movie. Trains, ooh, free. Everybody goes in. They're like, sneak preview, Trainspotting. Hot guys, sure. And then when the guy deep dives into the toilet, 5 people up and leave the theater.
Oh, my God. Did you sit through the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watched the whole thing in the theater.
Oh, wow.
For free.
Wow. Wow.
Zombie baby crawling on the ceiling and all. Yep.
That's the only part of that movie that I remember. The guy in the toilet and the zombie baby.
Yeah. Good times. Good heroin times. Not me. Mm-hmm. The movie.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yep.
Surprise, Hard as a Muscle is a hot chick, and I totally agree, Frankie is super cute. Frankie knows that Taylor was looking for a guy, but Taylor plays it off. She's chill, she's so chill. Then Taylor guesses Frankie is a personal trainer, but surprise again, she's a cardiologist. Frankie can tell that Taylor is rattled. Frankie's fine with not meeting up, she explains to her. She gets coffee either way, but Taylor has come to terms with something inside, and her gaze softens. They grab drinks and have cozy banter. Taylor admits to being career-focused like Frankie, and Taylor expresses fear around her business failing. Frankie says, well, now I've got to see this flower shop. Taylor corrects, more of a plant store with artisanal goods, like a really ugly khaki beanie that says Bloomer IA on it. Taylor asks, so, always women? Frankie good-naturedly shares that she dated women through college, but her career got in the way, and now she feels that if she doesn't make time for a relationship, it may never happen. They lightly flirt and make eyes at each other, and it's pretty cute.
Sweet baby Jesus, I'm going to apologize for this next section because I did not have a chance to read back over my notes. And at the very end of this little paragraph that I write, I made a note for myself that says Tamara needs to go over the above section because she was half asleep when she wrote it. And I did not.
Nice.
I am contemplating whether I want to read what I think I wrote or just read it straight on as it lays. Probably I'll just try to interpret it the best I can. I apologize, dear listeners.
I'm ready for the ride. I'm very excited about this.
I'm not. The next morning, Amelia goes to the bookstore where she is to do her one and only Penfield reading. There's a book clerk there, and she sees Amelia and freaks the fuck out. It's Margot, the purple-headed book-loving, surly to people who think she's single and ready to mingle girl from earlier in the movie, who also happens to be the store manager of Between Two Covers. You're not supposed to be here for another couple of hours, Margot gasps in between frantic breaths. Oh, I know, Amelia explains. I just came in a little early to get the full Penfield experience. I don't know if you know this, but I used to live here. Margot, smiling, says, I know everything about you. Amelia asks for the location of a small jewelry store that used to be in the neighborhood that her husband would go pick up jewelry and knickknacks for her from. She sure is around here, but she can't seem to find it. Margot tells her, sadly, it went out of business about 3 years ago, and now it's a super-duper cute coffee shop. I could take if you want, but no, she can't, because she's the manager, and managers can't just up and leave their posts without notice. Okay, this is a direct reading. Amelia lets wrap the hug by telling her she'll go out alone, but asks for a glass of water.
Wow! I have no idea what you said, but thank you!
Yes! Amelia, let's wrap the hug. Let's wrap the hug, girl.
Hugging.
She does ask for a glass of water so she can take her vitamins. Margot rushes off to get it for her, and when she's gone, Amelia's eyes get troubles and all is well up with tears.
Nice.
Yes.
It's like Shakespeare over here. Shakespeare.
Amelia's eyes get troubles and all is well up with tears. Is this going to be a curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal moment? So apparently whatever I wrote ahead of this was a curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal moment. But we'll never know, because she leaves a short while later. Margot goes downstairs to speak to the store owner, Brian. Margot has stars in her eyes. I just met Amelia Bloom, she says happily as she sits across from him. She's glamorous and wonderful and just a force of nature like you'd think. Brian looks at her troubled. You did confirm the dates, right? She assures him that she did. But the author's in town a few days early. He gets a faraway look in his eyes. I used to know her, he admits. Mm-hmm. And Margot freaks the fuck out again. Why didn't you tell me? Oh, my God. Well, not know her, he corrects. Well, not anymore. Before Margot can shine a light in his eyes and interrogate the shit out of him about their relationship, he changes the subject to the mural. He's not crazy about it. It needs less books and more heart, which means Margot has to shut poor Zach down again.
Aww.
I wonder if she might be a little bit excited to reach out to him, especially after she reacted last time. But no, ma'am, she's ready to end this fucking project already. But she does what she's told, sends him a message that says, less books and more heart. He's at his home in his studio, reads it, huffs in frustration, but diligently tears a new sheet of paper into his easel, stares at it, and then thunk, 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 his head against it. What a better way to get your ideas onto paper, Zach. By thunking your head onto it.
I don't think if you thunk your head onto paper, it puts the ideas onto it, Tam.
I know when I do it, it puts forehead grease on it.
Ooh. And maybe that leaves a mark that inspires you because you're mm-hmm. like, it's like,
yes.
Oh, it's in the shape of a car. I get it now.
Yeah. It looks like a dinosaur. Oh my God. Ding. Light bulb moment.
Oh, the forehead Rorschach test inspiration. Love it. Love it.
After the coffee shop date, Taylor goes into work, walking on sunshine. She has hearts in her eyes, which confuses the fuck out of her employee, Hannah. I had to open alone, she admits, and Taylor is perfectly fine with that. She compliments Hannah on a job well done. Hannah looks at her suspiciously and asks, what have you done with my boss? Taylor explains that she's just trying to go with the flow, try new things, be more open. When the doorbell jingles, they have a customer. Or do they? Nope. It's her mom, Amelia. She breezes in like she was just there a day ago. Mom? Taylor utters confused. What are you doing here? Amelia tells her, I'm just checking in on my kids, and marvels at the shop her daughter has created. Hannah, a little starstruck, comes from around the counter and introduces herself. Mom, without skipping a beat, pulls a flyer from her pocket and invites her to the book reading at Between Two Covers. Upon hearing this, Taylor rolls her eyes. Ugh, it all makes sense now. Mom's here for work. Amelia scoffs at Taylor's suspicion and says she wanted to invite her kiddos personally. She places an invitation into her daughter's hand, who politely declines. You couldn't make it to my grand opening when I opened up the Blue Mare, Aya, and you want me to attend your reading? I'm just going to try to say Blue Maria, like, in every single way I can.
I like it. I like it. I approve.
Yeah. Oh, Mom argues, you as a businesswoman should know you have to prioritize responsibilities for everything. Mm. Except family, Taylor adds, looking at her mother pointedly. Ooh, dig, 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 dig. Amelia asks Hannah, who had moments before pulled out some pocket popcorn and was watching the exchange with great interest, to give her a moment. Hannah gives them space, and once they're alone, Mom changes tactics. We have so much to catch up on, you, me, and Zach, but Taylor's not taking the bait. She says, well, I don't know if I can make time for you if only you had called beforehand or ever. Mom argues that she wrote letters and cards, but that does not placate her daughter. I know. Zach still hangs them on the refrigerator. He'll probably be happy to see you unless you're going to come sell the house from under him or something. Amelia looks at her daughter, incredulous from the accusation. So Taylor lays it all out. You left right after Dad died. We went from having two parents to none, and this is not something a quick stop on your book tour can fix. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have work to do. I'm sure as a businesswoman, you can understand that. Woo, sick burn. Mom, realizing that her daughter's anger will not dissipate, not today at least, resigns her attempted reunion and leaves in defeat. Outside the shop, she pauses momentarily and then gets a chest pain. Broken heart? No. But thankfully, Margot's there to see it and goes to assist. But we don't see what happens because we cut to a little later. Taylor beelines it to her brother's house. He hears her coming in the distance and before he sees her, calls out, Mom? His sister emerges from the shadows, throws her fist in the air, and cries, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal! And I knew you knew she was here. She accuses her brother of being in cahoots with Mom and scheming, but Zach thinks it's time to leave the past in the past. She disagrees. She had 5 years to fix things and accuses him of being like their dad, a big old pushover. He says he'd rather be like Dad than like... dot, dot, dot. A pause as heavy as a stinky fart hangs in the air, but he doesn't finish that thought. I wonder what he was going to say about his sister. Instead, he turns saucily away and tells her he has to get back to work. Taylor goes to leave, but thinks better of it and says she will tolerate her mom's presence in Penfield. But know this, dear brother, once she has her fill of hero worship here, she'll abandon us again, so don't get used to having her around. Burn. And then she walks away in a huff. In a huff!
Ugh. I am sorry. Mama comes into town, and does she say, hey, let's get together for lunch? Does she try to connect in any other way? No, she just crashes into her daughter's store, who she was invited to the opening for. But she does not go. She did not go. And she just is like, I'm here. Love me. And I'm like, fuck you very much. I have no feelings about this whatsoever.
I've known Pete. Yeah. No, I've known people like this. It's like, that's going to be a hard thing to do and a hard conversation and probably not be met with the reaction that they would like to happen. So they put it off, and then spring it on you and expect you to have a different reaction than you would have had they reached out to you before and said the right things. I'm not speaking from specific experience at all.
No, none whatsoever.
Yeah, maybe if I wait till the last minute and then show up in a completely inconvenient spot and ambush them and act like everything's okay, it'll go my way.
Yeah, I think it's perfect. I like the way you think. I'm taking all my social cues from Amelia from this movie from now on.
Okay, I was going to say, because you know I'm not like that. I was like, on Monday, are we okay to record Thursday? You're like, yes, Thursday's fine. Okay, then. Yesterday, I'm like, are we okay to record Thursday? Are you sure? Yes, I said it's fine. I know. I'm just double checking because I have to make a bunch of calls and I don't want to have to do it twice.
I know. I was like, have I let you down in the past? You're like,
no.
No, things are just chaotic in my life right now.
Yes. Yeah. My lovely boss, every time I change the schedule and I'm like, hey, I'm not going to the hospital today. I'm going to go work my regular shift. He goes, okay, well, tell everybody. And so in addition to telling him and getting his shit and then telling every single manager in an email and then telling my friends, relatives that I'm not going to be there, I was just like, I really don't want to do that twice. So I'm just making extra sure. Or I could just do it Amelia style and like call you at 8 o'clock and be like, Corinne, we're recording. Didn't you know? Like, I know I didn't ask you, but I figured like, you know, this is around the time we do it and I don't suspect you're doing anything. So let's go.
You know, if only Amelia had just delivered herself to the Blue Mom Maria in a cake and then like had somebody press play and they'd be like, put on the old razzle dazzle out of the cake. Razzle dazzle them. Hey! Then Taylor would have been like,
you can't get mad at anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't be mad at anybody when the old razzle dazzle song's playing.
And they jump absolutely out of the cake. Not. Yeah.
Well, that's like an added bonus. That's like the frosting on the cake.
Ooh, nice.
All right, let's see here. What's going on in the world of Penfield? Aha, I've got it.
Max and Frankie are hanging out at a local brewery chatting. Frankie fills Max in. So, she's never dated a woman before? Max raises an eyebrow. So she's straight. This is the conversation that Tam and I had at the beginning of the podcast.
Frankie, we're not really entirely sure.
Frankie shakes her head. Aren't we evolved enough to acknowledge human sexuality exists on a spectrum? She's never met a woman who has interested her before, and sometimes you don't know till you know, you know? Max shakes his back at her.
Oh my goodness, they have that kind of relationship. A little that's nice.
Shake, shimmy, shimmy.
A little shimmy. What if you did that to me if I was having like a serious conversation about relationships and you just started shimming your shoulders inexplicably at me? No, I think you've actually done that before.
Probably. I wouldn't put it past me.
Yeah. I would not either.
I believe he actually shakes his head at her, not back. And says...
Oh, I like the first version better.
I know. Okay, so what's the problem?
Frankie expresses feeling conflicted. She's not sure how interested Taylor is in her, and Frankie doesn't want to fall for her if they're just destined to be platonic friends. Max is tickled. You really like her. Frankie responds, yeah, which is why I'll probably never hear from her again. And I feel this so deeply because every person that I like that I go out with, they don't like me back.
Oh my God. It's happened to me a couple of times and I'm like, what is wrong with me? I'm a leper.
Well, let me rephrase. They love me. They just want to be my friend.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. I remember one time we had a conversation years back when you were dating right after Chloe.
Yeah.
And you were talking about some of the dates that you went on. And you're like, yeah, this one guy really hit it off. I think you went on a couple of dates. And then he pulled the old, like, I really care about you and I'd like to have you as a friend, but I don't want to pursue a relationship with you. And you're like, yeah, no, thanks. I have enough friends. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you're my idol, Corinne. You're like, yeah, I got enough friends. I don't need another one. And I'm like, damn.
I introvert hard and I do not like, and if I'm actively dating, that means that I have all of these people who think I'm totally rad, but they're not interested in me. And so that would mean that I like have this harem of people who all want to be my friend, which is lovely and all, but I have friends and I'm good. Like, I'm not dating for friends. And
oh, man. A harem of men would insinuate that they'd be doing some sexual favors for you, which, damn. A posse of men that are just at your beck and call. Yeah. Let me just think about that for a second.
I'd be okay, like, sorry. Do my dishes, sweep my floor.
Oh, yeah.
Make my house sparkle evermore. I will love you and be your friend if you clean for me.
Till the bitter end.
Yes. Max assures Frankie, I think you'll hear from her. Just then, Frankie's phone, bling, bling, bling. And Max says, see, bet that's her right now. And it is. Taylor messages her saying, need to blow off some steam. You up for an adventure? Frankie is excited until she realizes she doesn't know if it's a date or not. Max advises that she ask for some clarification, but in a flirty way. Frankie is all for it, but doesn't know how to do that. She's fretting over how to sound super casual. And then she gets an emergency page from work. She's gotta go. At the blow-on area. Taylor is
I like that one.
Is full on in the vulnerability zone. She just asked the woman who gives her butterflies to hang out, and she's waiting for a response, but it's just those dreaded blinking dots. Hannah asks her boss lady, what's up? And when Taylor whips the phone into her pocket, Hannah's curiosity is piqued even more. Taylor tells Hannah the sitch, and Hannah says, that's not necessarily a bad thing. He may be dating multiple women, but doesn't want to lead her on. Heck, maybe he's married. Taylor confesses that he is a she, and Hannah is proud of her boss lady, but can't imagine that getting ghosted by another woman must be harder. After Amelia left the bloomeria, she collapses a little, clutching her chest. As Tamara mentioned, Margot, who is out front of the bookstore, rushes over to her and takes her to the hospital and waits in the treatment room with Amelia until Amelia's cardiologist gets there. Surprise! It's Frankie!
What?
Ooh, the heart is the muscle, is Amelia's cardiologist.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Frankie asks if Margot is Amelia's daughter, but Amelia brushes her off. No, it's my bookseller, obviously. Amelia invites Frankie to the book reading, and Frankie chastises Amelia. You promised me you'd stop drinking, watch your diet, and take your medication religiously. You assured me that you had the necessary support system to do that here. Amelia insists that she's fine. She has the support of Margot and Frankie. Frankie pushes. You need more support, so get on that. Frankie is adamant. Where's your family? I thought that was the whole point of you coming here, for their support. Get on it. And thus we end the scene.
The next morning, Amelia meets Zach for breakfast. Amelia puts on her big girl pants, turns down the mimosa, and asks for juice. Just juice and an herbal tea. Zach comes in looking around like he's being tailed. He feels weird going to breakfast and not having invited Taylor. But Mom thinks, oh, she's too busy with work to do anything. But Zach informs her that they still have family dinner once a week. Mom smiles at this and says, oh, you two are so good for each other. And he nonchalantly says, well, we had to be. Oh my God, the way they just talk to their mom and all these things. I'm like, ouch, ooh, ow, ooh, ow, ooh, ow. This was one of those parts because she was just like, you could tell she wanted to clutch her chest again. Amelia starts realizing the toll her absence has taken and apologizes about not being there, but reminds him that she is now. Zach's face softens and they catch up on their daily trivial things. He voices frustration over the mural. She stopped drinking, apparently since 2 days ago. What? Zach's confused. So many lies of omission. Mom, will you just come clean? Not just clean and sober, but be honest about everything. Jesus! Mom wants Zach to talk to Taylor for her, but he doesn't think that's a good idea. His life is in shambles right now. Mom thinks that can't be true until he reminds her that his recent personal life highlight was accidentally going on a blind date with his mother. Mm. So, fair point, Zach. Fair
memories.
Point.
Memories.
Let's put that in the scrapbook. Oh, the one time we accidentally went on a blind date together. That was fun. I still have the olive pit from it. Look it. I put it in the scrapbook there.
Fingers, fingers,
right next to the awkward picture of us with Paul Campbell.
Oh. He's in like the middle of their selfie.
Yeah. Smiling like, oh my God, can you believe this shit? Seriously? Meanwhile, across town, Taylor is watering a terrarium at her shop. She yells to her assistant because she can't find the healing amethyst. Hannah, where are my healing amethysts? She hears a voice from behind her say, have you checked by your very tiny fairy lights? And it's Frankie. She smiles at her coffee date and says, you laugh, but I really do have tiny fairy lights. They look thrilled to see each other again, but Taylor divulges that when she got the text message, 3 dots of death, from Frankie, she had apparently given up all hope. Frankie apologizes and explains that she got called to work. Taylor understands. She wouldn't have thought she was ghosted if it hadn't been on the advice of her coworker, Hannah, who is hiding behind a succulent with yet another bag of pocket popcorn. At the sound of her name, she comes over and introduces herself to Frankie and oozes enthusiasm over the two of them and their potential relationship. Taylor sends her to the back to get those damn amethysts, and so her and Frankie could be alone. When they are, Dr. Frankie asks her out again. There's some place that night that she would really like to take her to and asks if she could possibly get off an hour early. The activity is kind of time sensitive. Taylor's about to decline because of course she can't get away when a voice from the distance says, I can close tonight in case anybody cares. It's Hannah. Taylor accepts her willingness to step up and she also accepts Frankie's date proposal. She will see her later that night.
Ooh.
After Frankie leaves, Hannah sidles up to her boss, picks up a watering can, and talks into it. I got a fever, and her name is Dr. Frankie. To the very unamused Taylor, which I thought that part was hilarious. Later that evening, Amelia's at the bar, writing. She orders a Shirley Temple, ooh, and the bartender looks confused because it's happy hour and she's Amelia Bloom, but she still declines. A handsome older man approaches her from behind and asks if the seat next to her is taken. She says it depends until she turns around and sees Brian Thompson. They exchange a warm greeting as he places one of her first edition books in front of her to sign. She asks how he knew she was there, and he says Margo. Amelia gasps. Is she going around telling everybody my business? But he shakes his head. No, just her employer. And then explains that he's the owner of Between Two Covers. He used to be an accountant, but got so caught up in Elise's books that he couldn't put them down. So he quit his corporate job and bought Between Two Covers, and that was his version of a midlife crisis. He was more excited about reading and saving a local treasure that it ended his marriage, and so now he's divorced.
Amelia Shirley Temple comes out and he notices it. Apparently, she used to be a lush because anybody who knows her well or casually is surprised when she doesn't have a drink in her hand. She explains that she's working and it's not a vanity thing, but Brian can sniff a lie in the water. Is it a health thing, he asks. She looks like she's seriously contemplating what to say, but we don't find out what that is because we need to take a break.
Curses! And we're back. When we were last talking about things, Brian asks Amelia if it's her health. And we never find out what she says. But we do get to go on a date with Frankie and Taylor. Hopefully that soothes the curiosity in your soul.
What kind of date? Where are they going? What are they doing? What are they wearing?
Oh, okay. Much to Taylor's chagrin, they are going on a hike because Taylor does not hike. But she is doing it for love. Hiking for love. Have you ever done anything on a date that you wouldn't do
for love?
Not yet. But everybody that said they like hiking, I'm like, what the fuck is up with dating apps and guys that like to hike? Like, is that just your standard automatic fill-in? I questioned a couple of people that didn't have hiking on their what I like to do for fun, because I'm like, when did hiking become a thing? When did this, like, nobody ever talks about hiking. Nobody around is like, let's go on a hike. So maybe it's just not in my circle of friends. But, like, it seemed 80% of the people that I matched with liked hiking, and I just didn't know when it blew up.
Oh, yeah. In the Bay Area, it's big. I think about 98% of the people on the dating apps are all about the hiking, and most of the clients who come into our office are as well.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe I just called it walking this whole time. I was wrong.
Walking.
What do? You go into nature and you walk.
Yes.
Oh, that's what a hike is?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, maybe I do like that. I'm not entirely sure. All right. Okay.
We've done those nature walks of hikingness before up at Alum Rock Park.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We also did that with your running group, which I absolutely hated because it was on an incline for the most part. Like, we're going up that hill. Are you sure? Is there a flat spot in the other direction? But we're not going in that direction. Okay. Okay.
Might have been Inspiration Point up at Tilden Park. You got the more exciting, more natural of them.
I'm like, do you hate me? Is that why I'm here?
Yes.
You said we were going on a nice little walk. You didn't say it was up goddamn hill.
There were downhills too. And then there were uphills. And then there were downhills.
Oh, I don't remember the downhills. I just remember the uphills. There seemed to be like 3-1 uphills to a downhill. I'm like, all right, we're going down. Now we're going back up. We're going up, and then a little bit down. Oh, no, back up. Back up. Nope, still going up. Still doing it. Oh, fuck it.
You know, the magic of the hikes that I take you on are they start with an uphill, and they end on uphill, and it's just uphill in between. And, you know, by the time you're done, then you can clearly say, I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for it, because this body is bootylicious for you, babe, because your booty's gonna be popping from all that hill work.
I never thought, like, everybody says that, oh, my grandparents used to walk to school both ways uphill, and I'm like, that felt like that hike. That sure did feel like that hike.
I know how to add incline and joy to your life.
You can add incline to my life. I don't know about the joy. At least not on that hike.
So, Frankie and Taylor go on a beautiful hike and hit the shoreline in time to see the sun setting. Taylor confesses, I don't know what I'm doing, but I think you're amazing. Frankie says, but. And Taylor walks a few feet away, whips out her phone, and texts her through the Classify app. Sometimes it's easier to type. Frankie texts back, we don't have to do this. And Taylor turns around, audibly responding, I wouldn't be so worried if I wasn't afraid of fucking this up. Frankie moves closer to Taylor. We all fuck things up at some point. Looks at her with hard eyes and tucks some hair behind her ear. And Taylor, bold ass motherfucker that she is, goes in for a kiss, and it's sweet. And then after they break apart, they kiss again. A dog does not run up and interrupt
them. This was one of the higher
Yeah. Higher same-sex kisses ever.
Mm-hmm. And just like you said in the previous episode, one of the best Hallmark kisses, just period.
I think it might have been a combination of the context, the date, the material, and the kiss all rolled into one.
Yeah.
Kiss sandwich. It was a nice kiss sandwich.
It was.
Back at the bar, Brian and Amelia grab a booth and get some food. Amelia shares that she didn't mean to stay away as long as she did, but it was so much easier staying away than feeling her dead husband's absence. And I say, yeah, that's fine. But did you try calling your kids? Did you try being involved in their lives in any way, shape, or form? Oh, no, you didn't. Okay, moving on. Amelia says, my kids don't...
But wait, you don't understand my pain. I had pain. My husband died, see? And I was hurting.
Okay. Right. And so you decided to completely detach yourself from your children. That makes complete sense as well.
Because they reminded me of my husband, you see.
Oh, right. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense now, right?
Yeah.
You feeling me now?
Yeah. I think that divorced parents all over the place should just totally disown their children as well because their kids remind them of their spouse.
Oh, that's different. Mine was dead. They're just there down the street or in a different town. They can go see him anytime. Jesus, you don't get it at all.
Death trumps divorce, okay? Okay.
Yes.
Amelia says, my kids don't understand, and I didn't leave to hurt them. I left so they wouldn't have to deal with my pain. Really, motherfucker?
Oh, God. Corinne is making the harshest goddamn look in the camera that scared me a little bit for a couple of seconds. Whew, deep breaths, Corinne. Deep breaths. Now her eyes are darting around like she wants to punch something.
What? What? But your children do not have to feel your pain for you to be in their lives.
See, she's too self-involved to know that.
Oh, my God. This mama is so self-involved. I can't even with her. Like, she's real. Like, there are parents that are legit like this. So, like,
yep.
I'm here for it. And also, I do not blame Taylor for blowing her mom off at the Blumenthal.
Oh, yeah. So when we were on the Snope show and we kind of recapped this with the lovely ladies of Snope, we had a conversation about one of the things that resonated with me in this movie is that I had kind of a craptastic mom and she would kind of waft in and out of our lives whenever she felt like it. And I had said at one point that I'm totally a Zach and my sister is totally a Taylor.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because I'd be like, we just got to give her a chance. She's our mom and you don't want this to be the last interaction that you have with her. And my sister would be like, fuck that. All to hell. She can kiss my ass. And I'm like, okay, I'll let her know you said hi.
Denise says hi. And fuck you. Bye.
Oh my God. And so I say, And I say, I think you mispronounced, I left so I wouldn't have to deal with my pain or theirs.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Brian asks if she's explained that to her kids, but she hasn't and doesn't think Taylor would listen. Brian encourages her to try. They leave the restaurant and Brian can, yes.
Again, if Taylor doesn't listen, she does have another child who would potentially listen. I think she keeps forgetting about Zach. Zach is back burner buddy.
Like, are you feeling like a little Zach at this moment? You're like, what about me?
Yes.
What about me?
Yes. Yeah. I'm totally not internalizing this, but you know, there's another person there. There's another person that'll actually listen to you and will, you know, have an open mind to an extent about what you're saying. That person is Zach, a.k.a. me. But that person...
they're artistic, it's like, and tender, squeaky... and loving. Like, not like me at all. I mean, no, that's not... Her name is Tamara? I mean, Zach? Zachara? Yes!
I know, totally like the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Like, you just gotta put all your focus and attention on the one that's loud and thrashing, and you're just behind him going, hello, I'm back here too. I don't know if you forgot about me.
Welcome to our lives as the younger siblings.
Yes, I'm the one ducking the blows. Hey. Oh, hey. Oh.
Brian and Amelia leave the restaurant and Brian confesses that he's always had a crush on her. She says, that's why my husband proposed so quickly. Brian points out that it's nice to know that they all have second chances. Her with her kids, him with his bookstore. And he doesn't mention, but also with her.
Oh, winky winky.
Mm-hmm.
She says after her heart attack, she began to wonder if she'd have that second chance. She sighs, and Brian asks, "Are you okay? Let me take you back to the hotel." Amelia takes a breath. "If you don't mind, I have another idea." She trails off, and we're left to wonder what that other idea is. Care to fill us in, Tamara?
Care to fill us in, Tamara? Yes, they have hot, passionate car sex.
Ooh.
Which her doctor would not recommend. But I guess it's exercise, so that's still good.
That's exactly what I was thinking would work. It'd be like a little workout. Yeah.
If it was a couple of months ago, yeah, she should be good.
Yeah, but I...
Anyways, no, that's not what happened.
Car sex is really awkward, just any way you slice it. It's just... Yeah.
I haven't had car sex in so long, I forgot. Might have to remedy that. Anyways, back at the Bloom house, Amelia shows up with Brian in tow, schlepping her bags. No call, no nothing. She's moving back in. Surprise!
Hey!
Zach apparently offered earlier, but she said no. Once Brian leaves, Zach asks, "What the fuck? Is that guy the reason you're in town? Where did you even meet him?" Mom admits at a hotel bar, and he chastises her for picking up strange men, because she's kind of high profile after all. Amelia finally divulges that he's an old friend, and she decided to stay with Zach after all, and to stick around for a while. He points towards the door. "It's not because of that guy, is it?" She says no, and that's what she's there to talk about. They sit down, and she finally comes clean.
Ooh, are they going to have a conversation about the birds and the bees?
She had a heart attack.
Oh, her heart attack.
Oh, dear God, no. How old is he? Like 32? If he doesn't know by now? Poor baby. That's why his murals are so bad.
Oh, ouch.
He's repressed. Probably and really frustrated.
He's so cute. I just want to rub up all on
him. She sits him down, Corinne, okay, to tell him that she had a heart attack.
Okay. Wow. That's
have
deep.
To do with the heart, not the groin. Heart, not groin.
Got it.
A few months ago, and the care is taking a little longer than she thought it would. Zach is shocked. She gives him the details and asks if he's mad, and he says, "No, I'm not mad, Mom. I'm fucking furious." Amelia's defenses fly up, and she starts arguing, saying, "What? Well, if your sister hadn't..." But he cuts that shit off. "Don't blame her. This is your choice, and we're always living with the repercussions of your choices. And you're not saving us any pain. You're driving a wedge deeper between us." Mom gets up and tries to leave in a huff, but Zach blocks her way and commands her, "You put your bags down." She stares him down, and he firmly says, "This is not a debate. Put your bags down," which she does reluctantly. She's used to running away when faced with problems, but this time her son is not letting her.
Question for you.
Yes.
If say we're recording our podcast or something like that, and I was to say to you, "Oh, hey, Tamara, so I had a heart attack a couple months ago. How would you feel?"
I think you would say that, and then the screen would go dark because I would be hanging up the phone, getting on a plane and flying to Oakland to ask if you're healthy enough for me to smack the shit out of you.
Like, seriously, she has a fucking heart attack, does not tell her kids for 2 months until she decides to just be like, "Surprise, I'm in town. Hey.
And my heart's fucked up.
Oh,
party,
my God.
Party.
I wouldn't expect her to, like, call, "Hey, I'm having a heart attack right now." But, like, she's in the hospital. Who's she going to reach out to? Her kids.
Yeah.
What is she going to tell them? "I had a heart attack. I am in the hospital." Like.
Or she's not, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. This mom.
Yeah, she's something else.
Oof.
A little later, when things have cooled down, Zach and his mom are in his studio, and she's admiring all the murals that he's made, or attempted to make. He tells her of his mural woes that he's getting from the mysterious owner of Between Two Covers, and Mom doesn't let on that she could probably give her a little and sway him, because the owner's Brian, remember. Shh, secrets. Instead, she encourages him and says, maybe he wants something in a different direction. Instead of finishing that thought, she walks away, but Zach follows her to the kitchen where she makes a cup of tea. "What do you mean?" he asks. And she doesn't really want to say.
It's finally dawning on her that her rash words and decisions are having a lasting effect on her kids.
Huh.
I don't know how to say this. Your dad was always so much better. Every time I try to help, it sounds kind of like a criticism. But Zach reminds her that he's asking for her opinion. Therefore, mm-hmm. it's okay to give it.
Mm-hmm.
So she plows through. I feel like your mural's not a representation of Penfield. You have old authors, old books, but what's the flesh and blood that makes this place different and special? He mulls over her words and agrees. That's a very good point. Mom smiles. Well, now that I've helped solve your problem, maybe you can help me solve mine. She smiles sweetly while Zach grimaces across from her, because that does not sound good.
Weed, weed, weed.
That
weed.
Evening. I know.
You're gonna help me with my problem now, son.
Smiling sweetly.
Smiling sweetly, no. With the little, like, twinkle of
you're gonna
evil
help me
in
with my
eye.
Problem now, son.
Oh, God, that's scary. That's a scary look you're giving me, Corinne. We need a video chat because I need to capture that. Lord have mercy. So, yeah, if you gave me that look, I would be on the plane again back to L.A. and far, far away from you because scary. That evening, Mom is buzzing around the kitchen baking when Taylor comes up the stairs. She has a bottle of wine in hand and announces loudly, "Tonight, I finally have a lot to fill you in on." But she falls silent when she rounds the corner and sees her mom. She looks at her brother angrily. "You set me up." Her mom chimes in. "No, he didn't. It's family dinner after all, and I am still family." But Taylor does not give a shit. She leaves in a huff. In a huff! And says, "See you next week." Turns tail and practically runs out the door. Zach chases after her and intercepts her before she gets in the car. "You can play nice with mom," she accuses, "but I'm not interested. Tonight, I really needed to talk to my brother." He's at a loss. "I can't choose between the two of you anymore, and this isn't what Dad would want. Mom has something she really needs to talk to you about." But Taylor has no interest in making Mom's priorities or needs her own and goes to leave again. This time, Zach says, "Hold on. There's a change of plans." Because they ditch Mom and go bowling!
Woo!
Zach is finally putting his sister before his mom and is present and here for the tea. They throw balls badly down the lane, and Zach recalls, "I thought I used to be really good at this." Until Taylor reminds him that Dad let them use bumpers, and Zach used them till he practically grew a mustache. They are having a really good time. Taylor looks at her brother sweetly and says, "This was a really good idea." After their games, a short while later, they turn in their shoes, and Zach just happens to see Margot. She has her back to him, so he calls out, "Hey, you here with your bowling league?" She admits that she's here to overthrow the despot. What's the despot? D-E-S-P-O-T?
Yeah, it's like a tyrannical leader.
Okay. As they said it, and I said it, and it spelled it this way, and I was like, I don't know what that means. Okay. She admits that she's here to overthrow the despot that runs the joint. They look over and see a group of beefy brosips clinking beers and laughing in bowling shirts, one of which just happens to be Frankie's best friend, Max. Zach offers to infiltrate the group and bring back intel, and Margot's totally into it. They chat and laugh easily when Taylor comes up and notices the interaction. She introduces herself to Margot, and Zach explains that she's the manager of Between Two Covers, the place he's doing the mural for, and tells Margot, "I may have something for you to see real soon." She's excited about the mural, and Taylor's surprised about it. Zach nods his head. "Yeah, Mom actually helped me with an idea." They part ways awkwardly. Zach says he'll be in touch to coordinate the revolution for Margot, a.k.a. infiltrate the boiling despot, as Taylor drags him away. She knows when a good time to leave is. Once they get outside, Taylor asks, "What the hell was that?" And Zach admits that every time he sees Margot, his mouth stops working. She tells him he should ask her out, and he doesn't know. And by the way, why is he taking dating advice from his sister who hasn't even been out with anyone since college? She steps on the sidewalk, looks at him seriously, and admits, "I'm actually seeing somebody right now." He is shocked, and she adds, "That's why I freaked out so much about dinner, because I wanted to tell you about it, not Mom." "You can't tell Mom that you're dating somebody?" he asks, confused. "No," she says, "I can't tell Mom that I'm dating a girl." She looks at her brother, waiting for a reaction, but he doesn't say anything, so she plows ahead. "I can't tell Mom big stuff, not like this, and I don't want to sit there and watch her pretend to care."
She finally demands for her brother to say something. And he shrugs. What do you want me to say? Does it really matter? He asks. I mean, man, woman, I don't care who you date as long as they treat you good.
Aww.
She looks at him, her eyes welling with tears, and he gets panicked. Did I say something wrong? But she grabs him in a bear hug, and they have a sweet moment as she whispers, you said exactly the right thing.
That's what my dad said to my sister when my sister was dating a woman, and she told my parents that she was dating a woman. My sister and I were leaving the house together, and my mom's like, okay. And my dad's like, I don't care who you date, just as long as they treat you well.
Aww.
Uh-huh.
Perfect thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Then Zach's phone rings. It's mom. Or he thinks it is because he listens to whoever's on the other line, hangs up and tells his sister that they have to go. Mom's just been admitted to Penfield General Hospital. What? Zach and Taylor rush to the hospital to find their mom in a gown laying in bed with Brian beside her holding her hand. They want answers stat. And the doctor comes in to do that. Holy shit! It's Frankie! Frankie and Taylor look at each other. There is a bona fide deer caught in headlights moment as they stumble around how to navigate this awkward chance encounter. Frankie tells the group that Amelia's not having a heart attack. It's a panic attack. And this sets Taylor off. Oh, panic! Because she probably feels partially responsible for putting her mom in the hospital. It's not as severe, Frankie assures them. There's no damage to the heart, and now that we know what's going on, we can better treat it. But Taylor's raging. I'm sorry, before we even go through anything else, who is this guy? She points at Brian and they get introduced. Mom's old friend that's banging your mom.
I know, she's like, she's in town for 2 seconds and she has a man.
That's sitting at her bedside while she's sick, holding her hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Meeting her kids. Right. Frankie sensing that her presence. Frankie
Ooh,
sensing that her presence is agitating Taylor, asks if Amelia would like to speak in the hallway privately. Mom says, hell no, she's not keeping secrets from her kids anymore. That's what put her in the hospital in the first place. And Taylor shakes her head incredulously. So it's my fault, our fault, she points at her brother, that she's here, right? Right, Frankie? Zach finally makes the connection that this is Frankie? I didn't say in the last part that Taylor told her brother that her friend that happens to be a girl is named Frankie. Maybe I should mention it now. That's how he figured out that Frankie was the Frankie. Mm. So sorry. Back to the story. Zach finally makes the connection that this is the Frankie. Frankie tries to placate her while explaining to Mom, but Taylor's not having any of it. I need to get some air, she blurts out, and hightails it out the door, leaving Mom flustered and confused. Perfect thing for a panic attack, am I right?
Yeah.
Zach gets up to go after his sister, but the doctor offers to go instead. Stay with your mom, she offers. And once they're gone, Amelia wants to know, what the fuck? She peppers Zach with urgent questions. That was a palpable tension. They obviously know each other. Are they friends? How could they be friends? They don't exactly move in the same circle. It finally dawns on her. Wait, are they involved? Brian offers to get her a doctor because she's getting agitated, and Amelia cuts that shit off. No, don't get a doctor. I don't need a doctor. My daughter is dating a doctor. The weight of that comment falls on her, and she smiles and turns to her son for confirmation. My daughter's dating a doctor? She says a little more proudly. And Zach looks on, not quite knowing how to react.
He's like, I'm not supposed to say anything. Awkward.
I know. I can't do. I'm just going to sit here really still and not make any sudden movements.
Good move, Zach. Good move. Like, she deduced that all on her own, so he did not betray her.
Nope.
Out in the hallway, Taylor is pissed that Frankie didn't tell her that she was treating her mom. Frankie explains she didn't know until Taylor was listed as an emergency contact. Also, I must add, HIPAA, hello? You can't just, like, be all,
I know,
oh, right? By the way,
I saw your uncle and he has syphilis. Did you know your uncle has syphilis?
Who would have thunk it?
I know, the stuff that's coming out of him. Oi!
Oh, I have some pictures. Would you like to see them?
Don't worry, I cut off his head. It's fine. It's fine.
By the way, he's got a very impressive, never mind.
Vocabulary.
Vocabulary.
Taylor is surprised that her mom listed her as an emergency contact, and Frankie sees an opening. I think your mom has a lot of regrets and that you should cut her a break. She could have gone to a lot of other specialists, but she came here to be with you. And Taylor doesn't appreciate that. You have no idea what's going on between us. She rushes down the stairs and pauses at the bottom. You have not lived with decades of mom putting herself first. Panic disorder? No. Amelia got her feelings hurt. And then she called some admirer to keep her company and give her sympathy in the hospital. And now everyone else has stopped to accommodate her. Frankie stares at Taylor intently and says, You're wrong, and you're being kind of cynical, which is not your best look. Taylor stares at her with fiery eyes. How about I make it easy for you then? Let's just stick to our jobs. And she walks off, leaving Frankie with a bucket full of, What the fuck? And Taylor leaving with a bucket full of, Fuck you very much.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Emotionals.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of heated emotions in this movie, and I was here for all of them. And I was like, oh, yep, mm-hmm. You have a good point. You also have a good point. You have a very good point, but then you don't know how she feels because I've had a mother like that, but I know you're trying to help, and I could see your point of view all throughout that conversation.
And it's not that I'm saying that I'm Zach, but I'm totally Zach, but I'm not Zach, okay? It's fine. Leave me alone.
Yes. Sitting quietly with my pocket popcorn, watching it, not knowing what to say or do, but agreeing with both of you and just here for the tea.
At the Blue Maria, Taylor is completely distracted, and Hannah has used this as an opportunity to take out an ad for the store. She's got big plans. Taylor isn't thrilled, but we'll leave the ad for a day. Hannah wants to leave early. Taylor knows that it's for her mom's book signing. Hannah apologizes. I'm sorry. I've been obsessed with your mom's spy novels ever since my aunt inappropriately gifted them to me as a preteen, thinking they were travel guides. Taylor chuckles. It's fine. Go. Hannah takes a moment before she leaves to say, Hey, you've got a mom that's alive and wants to be in your life. Not all of us are so lucky. Some people, me, may end up seeking out unconventional female role models, like you. Taylor is actually nice about it, tells her to have a good time at the reading, and says that Hannah is one awesome chick. And I'd also like to say that we can all use unconventional supportive role models in our lives. And just because you have a mom that's alive, it doesn't mean that they were great mentors or role models in your life, or should be in your life for that matter.
Mm-hmm. So many people that are like, I can't believe my mom did blibbity blib blib. And I'm like, oh, honey. Yeah, I can't sympathize with that. I'm sorry. I'll listen and nod reassuringly, but.
And then she gave me a dirty look. Uh-huh. And what else happened there?
I mean, you did wreck her car, honey. I would give you a dirty look, too. But she was really mad at me, and she wants me to pay for it. Huh. Yeah, okay, so when do we get to the unreasonable part? No, that was it? Oh, okay. Shut up and nod.
Uh-huh. That's when you break out the
non-committal noise here.
Yes. Max and Frankie are hanging out at the brewery, and Max gallantly calls Taylor a narcissist with mommy problems. Frankie objects. Hey, you don't know her. Max chuckles. I just want you to know I have your back. She smiles and gives him a hug. When they break apart, she says, I may have overstepped a bit. Just then her phone buzzes and Max says, That's not mommy problems, is it? And frankly, with the saddest puppy dog eyes, says, No. But after seeing the notification on her phone, her brain hamster is going on that wheel. And Tam, you just sent me the best brain hamster GIF yesterday.
It's because I asked you the same thing like 7 times. And I was like, I am so sorry. It was a little hamster going crazy on the wheel. And he was running and he was running and he was running and he was running. And then he just stopped and started spinning around with the wheel. Like
hanging on for dear hamster life.
The momentum
life.
Took him. Yeah. Dear hamster life. He made it a couple of times around too. It was very impressive.
Frankie's brain hamster is going, and she gets a look of hope on her face. Will you be my plus one to something? She asks Max. He agrees, and it's off to the book reading for them.
At Between Two Covers bookstore, Zach has finally finished the approved mural with some help from Margot. Brian comes out to admire it, and Zach questions whether or not he finally got the go-ahead because Brian's boning his mom, but he denies it. Actually, this is exactly what I was looking for. The camera pans up, and we finally see the mural, which is an abstract-ish rendition of a big bust of Margot's face, Taylor's face, Brian's face, Hannah's face, and Max? Question mark. I will repeat what the wonderful ladies of Snope said. What the fuck is Max doing up there?
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows Max. He doesn't have a connection with the bookstore or Zach. Why is his face on the wall? But we never find out, because Amelia walks in and admires her son's work. She's here for the book reading, and Brian ushers her in the back to get rested before the big show. Once they're alone, Zach finally works up the courage. He tells Margot that he didn't quite capture her essence in the mural. And she immediately says, what, the essence of a neurotic bookworm? He corrects her softly. Nope. Brainy, driven, original. All the qualities that would cause a guy who hasn't had much luck in love to ask a girl out. She finally gets the hint. He likes her. And she would love to go out with him. She kisses him sweetly on the cheek and tells him to find her after the event. Just then, Frankie and Max come in. Max looks at the mural and says, the fuck is my face doing on the wall?
He literally makes a comment about it.
He admires his picturesque cheekbones and says that he should get a residual income for allowing his likeness to be put on the wall.
As well he should. You know,
I, on the other hand, would have said, what the fuck is my face doing on the wall?
Zach did see him for like 30 seconds in the bowling alley. So, you know.
So is Zach asking out the right person in Margot because he saw that guy for 30 seconds and committed his face to memory and then put it on a wall? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure
I'm starting to question
yeah.
his unlucky in love comments. Yeah. Maybe you're barking up the wrong tree. Anyways, Zach tells Frankie that he didn't know she was coming. Neither did she, but sadly, Taylor will not be making an appearance. She's been quite distanced from everyone since the hospital. But Frankie agrees to keep an eye on Amelia and make sure that she doesn't overdo it that night at her reading. Later that evening, we are here for what we all came for. Dun-da-da-da! The book reading! Margot excitedly announces Amelia to the packed house, and she makes her way on the stage. Meanwhile, down the street, Taylor's closing down shop. She gets a post from Classify announcing Amelia's book signing starts at 7. She checks her watch. It's 7:10. She pauses momentarily, grabs her keys and her bag, and rushes out the door. Where's she going? Where's she going? What's she doing? Well, she's going to her mom's book reading. Just as her mom is mounting the stage.
Mounting the stage.
I know, I said that. Woo! What kind of book are you reading, Mama? She sees her daughter across the room and finally admits to her and the audience that 5 years ago she left Penfield, fled is more like it, after her husband died, and left her kids high and dry. They were grown, but she still abandoned them to handle the grief themselves, and that is unforgivable. She just couldn't manage Penfield without her partner, but she missed out on so much more.
Doesn't mean she couldn't have called and checked in with her kids every once in a while. Just saying.
She wrote letters and cards, Corinne. Letters and cards.
Totally the
Not
same.
Not only do you get an update that's one-sided that you can't respond to, you get a beautiful card, potentially, with a cute little owl with a flower wreath and some bedazzling on it, just like Corinne bought earlier and showed me. So cute. We have to put that on our
Instagram
social media page. So cute.
I love it so much.
She points them to the mural behind her and explains, "This beautiful piece of art was done by my son, who is also an artist like his mom, but he uses color and shapes instead of dusty old words." Zach's in the audience, seated, and gets a little misty-eyed at the shout-out.
Aww.
She waxes a little poetic a little bit more and then realizes she's talking about herself again and calls her cell phone it.
Calls herself on it.
Oh, calls herself on it. She calls her cell phone it. The audience chuckles as she said that, "And that's something my daughter would tell me, who is just like me, stubborn, determined, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and without any help from anyone, mostly me, has opened a beautiful plant store down the street called Bloomeria." Bloomeria.
Bloomeria.
Bloomeria. Bloom, 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 bloom. Me-ria. Frankie, standing at the back of the room, also gets teary-eyed, and Hannah is fist bumping the air because this will for sure increase business. "And," Mom adds, "I really hope I didn't deter her from dating my cardiologist. And if it takes me getting another referral for another doctor to get them back together, well, I will do that." Taylor finds Frankie in the audience. They look at each other and Frankie mouths hi. "And," Amelia announces, "I'm going to use my voice and my writing style to find these complicated stories and stop creating epic things happening across the world when sometimes the best stories are the ones right around the corner."
Aww.
Or she pulls out her phone. "On the Classify ad." The audience titters with laughter as she reads a post about an author returning home to find old friends and new and share stories. And without further ado, she whips out her book and starts reading from chapter one while her children and the audience look on adoringly. Next week for family dinner, they have a full house. Not only are Taylor and Mom there, but also Hannah and Brian. Mom's plugging away at a keyboard and Taylor tells her dinner's going to be ready soon. Amelia argues, "I sometimes just got to strike while the iron's hot." But then, thinks again, closes her computer and puts her family first.
Aww.
They walk to the kitchen to see Brian and Zach sharing a bottle of wine. So Taylor comments, "How's it going with you and your boyfriend?" "Ugh, how many times," Mom corrects, "do I have to tell you that he's not my boyfriend? He's just an old friend from college." "Yeah," Taylor agrees, "but Zach tells me that you haven't been home most nights, even when he's out late with Margo." Mom flushes just as the doorbell rings. "You answer that," she says saucily, "while I go have a word with my son about discretion." Taylor goes to the door, and it's Frankie peeking behind a beautiful floral bouquet.
Aww.
They smile warmly at each other, and Frankie whispers, "Please don't tell my girlfriend that I went to the other flower shop in town." They kiss, and Taylor murmurs, "Don't worry, your girlfriend will forgive you." Frankie asks how it's going with Mom, and Taylor admits that "I'm trying, she's trying, everyone's trying." Frankie adds, "We are all blooming where we planted." And Taylor laughs heartily. Zach is never going to live that down, and I am here for it. She goes to close the door, but an arm shoots in between the crack before she can. A slight, well-dressed man stands at the door. "I'm sorry, is this Amelia Bloom's house?" They confirm it is, just as Mom rounds the corner and squeals, "Graham!" She introduces him to her daughter and girlfriend. "This is Graham, my publisher." She ushers him inside, and he's apparently joining them for dinner. Frankie grabs Taylor by the arm. "Oh, he is so Max's type," she says, smiling devilishly. "Well then," Taylor said, "we should go grab good seats." And they're off to the table where everyone that we've met in the story are seated, all dining together, friends and now extended family, and the best that Penfield has to offer. They clink glasses and cheers. The end.
Aww. That was beautiful. Woo.
Thank you. Oh, Corinne.
Yes.
What do you give? Love, comma, classified. Love, comma, C, comma, L, comma, A, comma, S, comma, S, comma, I, comma, F, comma, I, comma, E, comma, D.
Ooh. Comma, comma. Comma, chameleon.
Yes.
Oh. Okay, I give this a solid 4 dry kisses. Mm-hmm. I thought it had a good love story. That was nice. I love Melora Hardin, who played Amelia Bloom, the horribly self-involved mom. She is in a TV show, The Bold Type, which I really liked her in. She was like
an awesome mentory boss lady. I did want to also say that it also had one of the leads, Frankie, was played by Ariane Mandy. Mandy? I'm not sure. She is of, she was born in Los Angeles, but ethnically she's of Chilean and Iranian descent. So this movie actually had some diversity in it, which I appreciated. Her friend Max is Black, and Margot, who worked in the bookstore, was of Asian descent as well. So they had some diversity in the movie, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Good story. Actual love story. Good kiss.
Good kiss.
And real drama versus the fake drama that I listened to half a phone conversation and now I can't talk to you anymore. Which, you know. Really? Really. So, yeah. What did you think of this movie, Tamara?
I'm giving it 5.
Ooh!
5 dry kisses. 5. 5 dry kisses.
She broke
it finally happened. Today's the day.
Oh, Mark. Dry kiss barrier. 5 dry kisses. Oh, my gosh.
The glass ceiling. Gone right through it. I've got my lip balm on. The kiss is not that dry anymore. I'm at the top of the heap. It's slightly moist. Lips are parted. Here for it. So I guess you can tell that I could relate to Zach.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a self-centered mother. I saw my sister and Taylor, so I felt very seen in this movie, especially around those aspects. As you said, the stakes were high. I love high stakes. I thought a lot of their interactions were very genuine. I thought the writing was done really well. The only criticism is some of the side stories didn't have as much attention as I would have liked. Like, uh-huh. I would have liked to see a little bit more of Zach and Margot,
yeah.
Instead of Brian and Amelia. But I understand, like, she's kind of the mom and, you know, so it's more centered around her, which I get. So it wasn't, like, too bad. But the two love interests between Frankie and Taylor, I was completely invested in what was going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to make it. I have gotten the 3 bubbles of death in a text message and then had somebody drop off. So I, like, again, I feel so seen. The kiss was very nice. The tension was palpable, especially in the hospital when they had to have a conversation over the mom that was having a panic attack. So all of those things, I was like, yes, 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 yes. I liked how they layered the story. It was a pain in the ass to tell because Corinne, we chunked them together. Like Corinne was, she did this outline and she chunked everything. And she's like, I'm not going to, because we're over here on their date. And then we're back at the plant store. And then we're over here with mom. And then we're over here at Zach's house. And so it was just like layers, 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 yeah. Like a baklava.
Yeah.
And she just like, we had to, just for sanity's sake, chunk things together.
Well, and I think that the gentle listeners would have had a harder time following it if we'd just been like, and now we're here. And now we're here. And now we're here. In the movie, it was
100%.
Very nicely done, though. I really liked how they did it.
Yes. It was well done, very layered, not like we retold it, but that's not a bad thing. I think podcasting and watching are two completely different things. Go figure. Anyways,
yes.
5 dry kisses. Loved diversity, tension, stakes. Actors, I thought they were all very well cast. Love, 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 love. 5 dry, which equals 1 slightly moist kiss.
Miss Tara, what movie are we doing to kick off our August of Change theme this month after our first Love, Classified, which was all about changes in family dynamics?
We are going to deviate from the Hallmark universe, and we are going to do one of my favorites from back in the day, Clueless.
Ooh. I haven't seen this since it came out in the theaters in high school. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watch it every time I see it on TV. I have owned it twice in its VHS and DVD form. And I have not bought it a third time because I just haven't seen it. So, but if I did, I probably would.
And one of the nice things about us moving to a more mixed platform in our movie recaps is that Clueless can easily be seen on Prime. So so it's super easy to see on streaming if you want to watch it before we do it.
Talk shit about it.
Oh.
Just kidding. I love Clueless. I will not be talking shit.
Well, that's super exciting. I am here for Cher. I am here for the vividly colored outfits, the tiny backpacks, and the fluffy pens. I can't wait to dive into Clueless. And if you have any thoughts on our next movie, Clueless, on Love, Comma, Classified, as well as anything else, feel free to email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you have the time, we would love to see your ratings and reviews anywhere you might listen to this podcast. But if you can't, we still appreciate you stopping by. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Woo-hoo. Bye. I don't want to be a man. I want to be a teddy bear. I don't want to be a man. I want to be a teddy bear.
Oh, shit.